Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I too am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input.
Yes.
So now, we'll get on with the show.
Okay, go ahead and go. I'm just talking. All right, thanks. Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America, where we're not having snow. That's good news. That's good news. I hope you guys are all having a good December. I can't believe we're only, about 22 days off from Christmas? Hard to believe. I don't even know where this year has gone. But welcome to the show tonight. For those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a We Recovery program, because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. So again, I'm your regular Wednesday host, Kim Justice. If you want to know more about me, check out my website at inaflash.org. How quickly our lives can change, right? Inaflash.org. Well, I'm really excited about my guest tonight. It's not often that I get to meet my guests personally, because as most of you know, we stream all over the country, and I don't know why I don't find too many guests around home, but she's actually been doing what she's been doing for quite some time, but I only became aware, also very weird, our town isn't that big, but only became aware a couple years ago. And all of you who are regular listeners and friends of mine on Facebook know what an animal lover I am. You also know how many shows I do that involve veterans with disabilities, children with developmental or other disabilities. And we've had a show or two long ago on equine therapy somewhere else in the country. But it's interesting, because the first time I visited Scattered Joy, I'm going to introduce Joy. I'm going to introduce her in just a moment and bring her in, but I don't know that she even knows this. The first time that I visited, our dog had, he was a French bulldog, and he was 12, and it had been really terrible. He had a disease I didn't know that dogs had, and I've had dogs my whole life, all different breeds and their ending has been all different things, but I had never heard of doggy dementia, and there's an actual name for it in the animal world, but that's basically what it is. And when Benny started having odd behavior, you know, at first we just thought it was a dog getting older, doing some weird things. And then as it progressed and became really upsetting both to us and to Benny, because he didn't know what was going on and happening with him. It was a horribly long 6 months from the time the behavior started to when we had to let him go. And I found out about Scatter Joy, and my heart was broken. And we went, and I expected, I had read a little bit about what they did, and I expected to see horses, primarily, I guess, and otherwise didn't have an expectation, was just trying to get out and get some fresh air. And when I got there, I saw the camels and the little mini ponies and all kinds of other animals besides horses and the cattle and the pig and the big tortoise and everybody. But on the scrolling pictures, you guys will see not only a wallaby, which is like a kangaroo, for those of you who aren't familiar, I'll let her tell you the differences. But then we happened to arrive when there were two babies, a baby kangaroo and a baby wallaby in the nursery. And it warmed my heart. There was a kangaroo outside, and the aid worker told me that that was the very first day outside for that little wallaby. And you can go in the pens there and pet these animals. And so I went in and I knelt down on my knees, and the little wallaby came over and stood up right in front of me and put his little paw on my shoulder. It was really an incredible experience. I had never had that happen before. I had never met a wallaby. And I smiled. And I hadn't smiled for quite a while, and it warmed my heart, and my heart had been cold and shut down from that experience with our dog. And this little wallaby was the best medicine at that moment that God could have provided. And so as far as the purpose and the things that go on, as I read more, learned more, and then finally had the pleasure of meeting Joy, I get it. And you guys will get it too after hearing her talk tonight. But it's an incredible place, and animals are some of the best medicine. But it goes two ways. There's a lot of animals out there, and I caution some of you, the holidays are coming up, and it's nice if you get a pet for the holidays, but if you randomly get a pet without really finding out doing some research and finding out if that pet is going to fit in well with your family. I'm maybe talking about dogs and cats at this moment, not wallabies. Then, first of all, right now with the economy and everything else, there are a lot. The shelters are full. But with the holidays coming up, when the holiday is over and people find out about the responsibility of the new pet, and maybe it wasn't the right pet for the family mix, there's going to be a lot more animals that need to be rescued. And so at this place, the door swings both ways, animal rescue and people rescue. And between those two, they rescue each other. Joy Bartling was raised on a small town dairy farm here in Nebraska. In 2006, she founded Scatter Joy Acres, SJA, in Omaha to provide a new home, new life, and new meaning by rescuing abused or neglected animals. Later, the ranch was relocated to 15 acres in just outside. I wrote inside. Sorry about that typo. I'll fix it. Outside the Omaha city limits. The need and the response was so great, they needed more room than what they had had. Bartling's first loves were the animals, who became her closest childhood friends and confidants when she felt she had no one else to turn to during a painful part of her journey to adulthood. Understanding that there are often deep pains in life and the many times that human beings were not able to touch them, she realized that she was not alone. At the ranch, the animals serve as an integral part of the ongoing mission of providing therapeutic interaction for developmentally disabled and autistic children, seniors, veterans, and at-risk children. Joy embraced her passionate gift in life, which also would be a significant way to give back to the community. Scatter Joy Acres was created to scatter God's joy across all of his acres. On the ranch, each animal has a name, a story, and a significance, which is demonstrated in warmth and love they share with every person they encounter. The interactions animals share as they meet with people are simply amazing. Again, there are many programs we're going to be talking about, and they are a nonprofit who operates on donations. And so I encourage you to check out the website, which most of you know is written down in the program notes to the show, posted all over social media, scatterjoyacres.org. Excuse me, I got a little, speaking of animals, I got a little frog in my throat tonight, but in any case, we'll be repeating that during the show, but it is in the program notes as well, Scatter Joy Acres. You can see the types of programs they have and learn more during or after our program tonight. I also want to congratulate Joy and Scatter Acres. They have gotten a number of different awards over the years, but most recently in the last couple of weeks, a national organization, civic organization, Daughters of the American Revolution, bestowed on them the National Outstanding Community Service Award. And there's a lot of competition for that. It's not a local thing. It's a national award. And so I want to congratulate them for that. Nationally, they found that the work that's done, the many programs that are done there that are beneficial to people in need, were worthy of such an award. So with that, I'm really happy to bring on Joy Bartling. Joy, welcome to the show tonight.
Thank you, Kim, for having us. We're excited to share more about Scattered Joy Acres.
Me too. Me too. I just love that place. And maybe before we start at the beginning with a little bit of your background and what led you to this path. You know, it's funny what I just read. I should reread, but I'm an only child, and so when I was growing up, we always had a dog in the home. And it's amazing, you know, that's also where I developed my relationship and my love of animals, because when there's two parents and you don't have a sibling, then the animal becomes your best friend, your confidant, your sibling. And now grown up, I don't have children, and my dogs are my children. So it carried from a young age that relationships with animals were serious in a loving kind of way. Significant, I think, is what I mean to say. And then into adulthood, because they filled so many roles, at least for me. But real quick, before we back up and start at the beginning and then just kind of flow forward, tell the people real quick, since I'm the one that brought it up, the difference between a wallaby and a kangaroo, because looking at them, it's hard to tell the difference, especially for someone who's seen neither. You know, you're here where I am, so you know that we don't have kangaroos hopping around, and people don't get the opportunity to see kangaroos or wallabies around here, so let alone get in and touch them. What is the difference? Tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll back up and start over.
All right. So basically, kangaroos and wallabies both come from the same part of the country. Really, the only difference between them is the size. Wallabies are a much smaller stature. They a little more petite. Probably they average maybe probably about 2 feet tall when they stand up on their back legs. Where kangaroos, the females, when they reach maturity, they're going to be closer to 4.5 to 5 foot tall. And the male kangaroos will be anywhere between, they can be possibly 6 to 7 foot tall. And have a big kick, too. You know, you want to make sure that you're on the right side of a kangaroo. They do like to box. Ours were all bottle-fed, so they're very social and loving, and they love people. But then there's some times when they don't get their way, and they come up and want to box you or kick you with their, you know, their tail is very strong, and they lean back and sock you with their back legs. So you always want to be on the right side of a kangaroo.
I guess. Well, I've been fortunate that they've been children or adolescents or babies when I've met them. So
we,
yeah, babies. So I didn't have to worry about a boxing match, but that's that's funny. And I think I told you that when I was down there, I'll have to send you a picture. I'm sure it was the wallaby that I met the first day after he put, he or she put the paw on my shoulder and just kind of sat there with its nose by my nose. It was the most incredible thing. It's like it knew that I had a broken heart or that I was hurting, which is probably a silly thing because it was just a baby. But the way that it, you know, the way they don't boing, 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 not hop like that. They, you have to check it out, people, on the website. But came over to me, stood straight up, and I was down on my knees, so we were about even, put the paw on my shoulder and the nose right in my face, and paused just long enough to have this little electricity, energy, you know, flow between us. And then, you know, took off and went and got some food, grass, whatever, put the paws up in the way that they eat. You know, it kind of looks like they're praying there for a minute. And I clicked a picture right there. And my husband, I think for my birthday that year, maybe Christmas, I'm not sure, but he had a gallery-wrapped canvas made of that picture. And it's above my makeup table in our room. And so every morning when I come in, I think of you in your place because I look up and I think of that moment when I met that wallaby because the picture's right there in my room every day. So animal energy is so powerful.
You know, in Genesis it talks about on the sixth day, God created land, animals, and then he created humans. And I always tell people, I said, God did that because he knew that we needed those animals to get through some times in our life.
Boy, that's the truth. That's really the truth. So tell us a little bit. We allude to it in the beginning, but in the introduction, but tell. So you grew up on a farm where there were animals. Obviously you liked them, but how did you develop the depth of the relationship beyond working with them as a child and then decide, and you can tell this in as many phases as you want,
mm-hmm.
but then make you decide to go into this business, service business of rescue and then develop the programs that help people? Because with you, with that Bible quote you just gave, the animals came first, didn't
mm-hmm.
they?
Yes, they did.
The dog rescue mm-hmm. and the animals came first and then the people on the seventh day.
Yep.
Oh.
So, yeah, huh. being
that's interesting.
Being the oldest of four children by 7 years, born and raised on a dairy farm. So if anybody is ever, you know, related to a dairy farmer, the cows don't go on vacation. They milk. You know, they got to milk no matter what. And so I, you know, took care of the farm. Age difference between me and my siblings, like I said. And so I didn't really have, a relationship with my siblings because they were so much younger. So I just kind of hung out with the cows. And they kind of listened to me, and they let me, you know, vent and just talk about things in life that I needed to talk about. They would wrap their heads around me. as I laid in the necks of them, and and that was the unconditional love that I knew and I could relate to. And so as I went through my, you know, adolescence and young adulthood, and, you know, we all as individuals make some choices in life that aren't always the best choices. Animals were always there to help pick me up, brush me off, and keep going forward. And so in 2006, I had the opportunity to start this organization, Rescuing Animals, that in turn help rescue people every day. And so we are actually in our year 18 of this ministry that continues to serve animals and people. We visit senior centers, and the assisted living, independent, and memory support. We have approximately about 65 facilities that we see on a monthly rotation, and we bring a different animal every month. I think last month it was baby kittens, and this month it's a baby lamb. And they go in and get to hold and pet and, you know, hang out with these animals that show them unconditional love. As well as we serve veterans, at-risk youth, and disadvantaged individuals with our programming as well.
Now, I saw maybe we go through briefly each of the programs. I know they're similar. People get to interact with the animals. It gives a sense of that unconditional love and a sense of purpose. I know that over the years, a lot of the people who have been provided service like to then become volunteers, and that's kind of the way that it works even here and in a lot of different venues in life, where people who are in need of help and the place that they get help, they learn, or innately it comes to them, about paying it forward. And like to be part of the solution instead of part of the problem, and then wind up volunteering. And that's a pretty cool thing. So with the kids, let's start with the kids. I know the day that I was there, but I was too busy playing with the animals myself to take notes, and so you're the guest, you talk about it. But
kids come in all sizes. Yes
they do. Thank you. They certainly do, because I was not wanting to get in their way and interfere with what they were doing, so I was on the opposite end at that time, you know, letting them do what they were doing. But a bus had brought some kids out, and they might have been visitors. But, for example, in your program for developmentally disabled children or autistic children, what types of things do the kids get exposed to and get to do? And how have you seen healing exhibited from that interaction?
So some of those individuals, like if the school buses or things that come out, you know, they might be out here for a field trip for a school event. And those individuals get to, it's a self-guided tour, and you get to go in the pens, like you did with the wallaby, and you get to interact with them. Now, sometimes you'll have kids that have never been around animals before, and so they're not sure. But to be honest, it's not the animals that they're scared of. It's something inside of them that gives them that fear to be scared of that animal. And so we could just kind of, you know, we have our hospitality individuals that are here, which is a volunteer position, and you get to, you know, take those people into the pens and interact with them. So we had a father and I think two or three sons that were here visiting at one time, and they were standing by the porcupine pen, and one of our hospitality people said, "Would you like to pet them?" And they're like, "You can pet them."
Oh no.
And she's like, "Yeah, you can pet them." So they took them in, and our porcupines are very friendly. We've had them since they were babies. You sit down on the ground and they want to crawl into your lap, and you know, people are a little unsure because they're porcupines, right? Porcupines don't throw their quills. See, we learn all these things about how all these animals do things, but don't do the research of what they actually do. So ours are African crested porcupines. They do not have microbarbs on the end of their quills as North American ones do. And that's what gets stuck in dogs' jowls, because where do dogs always smell first when they want to meet something is their butts. And so that's how the porcupine quills get into dogs or your clothes or something like that. But this gentleman had, you know, they came out of the porcupine pen and they went on about their tour of the ranch. And this gentleman came up to this same volunteer that had got him in with the porcupines probably about an hour later. And he said, "I just want you to know that I petted the horses today." And my volunteer said, "Well, that's great." And he said, "No, you must understand. When you took me into the porcupines and showed me that I do not have to be fearful of them, I am scared of horses. I went out and I touched and I petted every horse." So it goes back to where I was just talking about earlier. You know, we're not always afraid of animal that's in front of us. We're afraid of the animal that's inside of us.
Yeah.
And so we can use that animal in that situation to be able to not only break the fear of the Clydesdale horse, but what Clydesdale horse is inside of you that won't let you get past the gate. So, that's probably what you had, you know, seen. The school bus shows up and we take them on a tour to get to know more about themselves, even though they think they're just coming to the zoo to pet animals. And then we have another individual. We'll go to the behavioral or physically or mentally challenged individuals. These individuals come out to our location and they help volunteer. They help clean pens. They help fix fence. You know, each individual has a capability of what they can and can't do. So we never give them a task that they are going to not succeed at. We want to make sure that it's a positive experience. And so through that program of working with those clients or volunteers, we have been able to build skills in these individuals, which in turn makes them a productive citizen in our communities. And so I was going through some things one day at going through the garage, getting rid of some things that we didn't need and was going to drop it off at the Goodwill. And when I pulled up to the Goodwill, this young man comes out and he says, "Joy, do you remember me?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "I just want you to know that I have this job now in the donation department, and it was because of you and teaching me the skills that I needed to first control my anger and then to make sure that the job got done completely from, you know, the beginning to the end. And so I want to thank you for giving me those skills." So those individuals, we, you know, even cleaning a camel poop, it's a task, but it has procedures that have to be done, not only for the safety of the volunteers, but to make sure the camels are cared for and, you know, they have clean bedding and they're not sleeping in wet, you know, stuff. We don't want to sleep in a wet bed, and neither do they. So,
right.
I
was just going to say, in animals, that must have been, first of all, very gratifying. You would do what you do anyway, but to hear about it, that it's really made a difference in someone's life, not only to face a fear, but to teach responsibility and skills that they might not otherwise learn. And, you know, interestingly, even whether it was picking up camel poop or doing the bedding or whatever, you know, with animals, you know, they're vulnerable. They don't, at least the times I've been there, I've never gotten attacked by an animal, and they're sweet, and there's a loving relationship. And so I won't glorify, you know, that part, picking up droppings and things like that, but it's easier to do because you have a relationship with the animal and you can see the animal happy and healthy, and you're part of that, you know, the volunteer is part of that process. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to learn in a way like that is great.
And Kim, I have volunteers that are probably in their 50s and 60s that come, and that's all they want to do is clean pens because that's their time to get out of this world or things that are happening in their life and just be with the goats. I mean, I have a lady that comes every Wednesday, and that's all she wants to do. She cleans the goat pen. And let me tell you, she rakes it from one side to the other and just cleans it up. And that's her therapy time.
Well, and you know, I wasn't aware. I hadn't visited your place in Omaha until you moved to your current location. And all I can say about what you just said about the woman is that, you know, now they've moved out to a country setting outside the city limits. And it's, you know, I've talked about this before. One of the things my husband and I do, I'm a homegrown here in Omaha. And so for as old as I am.
You're okay. It's okay. We're okay.
Sounds like a baby.
Yeah, I think one of they were somebody had a bone and the other one wanted the bone.
Oh God.
Yeah, it's okay.
We,
you're okay.
Oh, poor baby. Sounds better.
Yeah, he's okay.
Gone.
You're okay. I know. You're okay. Yeah, here you go.
What kind of a baby is that?
It's a Great Pyrenees puppy.
Going to be a big puppy.
He's going to be a big puppy, yes. Yep.
But
there
just
six of them that
baby one
six
now.
Six of them that we rescued, yep. They were not very well taken care of, and they came out of Kansas. The Humane Society picked them up for neglect. And so these four-month-old Great Pyrenees puppies weigh about like they're 2 months old. So they've had lots of love and attention and lots of worming and vaccinations and snuggles. And he's the
so
last one.
So are they ready
to
be?
Yep, they're all adopted except one. I have one that's left. The family that adopted him are moving to a new home, little acreage, and so they didn't want to have to move him, you know, a couple times. So he's staying here until they move next weekend.
Oh, that's good that he's got a new home coming. And that's what I was going to say before the poor baby was upset was just that, you know, this town has grown so much in my many years that it's a big, you know, maybe not compared to someone who comes from what we would have characterized as a big city, but, you know, when our city ended at 50th Street, and
right.
Now, you know, it's way out in the 200s and as far north and south, you know, as you can go, it's gotten big and there's traffic and I'm older and I hate progress. I think the older I get, the more I hate progress. I liked the size our town was, you know, and now it's a lot bigger. And so what my husband and I do, we're past the, you know, going out late at night and that kind of thing. Our thing, because I take pictures, is going on country drives. So our idea of leisure and relaxation, while Omaha is a swell city and there's tons of things to do, the joy that we get is getting out of the city and going to, I mean, you know, and as they develop here, we had nothing but green space when I was a kid, you know, and now they put up huge office complexes and all kind of building projects and then a 6x6 piece of grass after they've taken down huge old trees, put up a brand new little stick tree, and they call that green space. And so when we leave the city limits, you know, we kind of throw a dart in whatever direction, and the goal is just to drive outside of the city where it's quiet, there's not as much traffic, you can hear yourself, you can leave a lot behind in the city, and then start absorbing the calm and nature outside the city. So I can see why the woman who comes to take care of the goats or anyone gets that sense of release in your new location, because it is spread out. It is, quote unquote, out in the country. And so it's got a more laid back, relaxing environment. I'm not saying that your place in Omaha wasn't. I just didn't happen to visit there. I know
right.
that you expanded.
Yep, that same individual used to come to our Omaha location when we had it there too, and it's a little bit closer to her now, but she did the same thing there. She came and cleaned the goats all the time, so everybody has their connection.
Huh. So the seniors, you primarily take animals to visit. The children have various tasks that they do. Do they do, what about the veterans?
So
What's the veteran program like?
We have a few different programs for them. Some of our vets we see in the senior centers as well. But we have a program called EGALO, which is a program where we use our horses to do therapy with individuals, PTSD, trauma, abuse, neglect. The horses are very therapeutic. They are part of our team. It's an equine specialist, a mental health practitioner, the horses, and then the client. And those horses actually help that individual unfold the story of things that are going on in their life. So we don't let them know anything about the team of horses. We don't let them know their name, their breed, their sex, any of that, because those horses become either people, objects, things in their life, and they use them as well as we have hula hoops and pool noodles and different things that they can use to build obstacles or things in the arena. Sometimes people will take a pool noodle and make a square, and that is either a house or something that's happened significant to them. And they just kind of build that story in the arena. And those horses become the therapeutic answers to what has happened in their life. So, for example, I had a veteran who came to us. We did a marriage session, and at the end of that week, the wife had came up and said, I need to do some individual therapy, and I want to use Coco, the horse. Well, Coco, the horse, was their animal that her husband and her had during their sessions, and that was like their go-to horse. And so when she came for individual therapy, we were all standing outside of the arena, and the horse that she had been so attached to and everything was on the opposite side of the arena, and she would not enter into the arena. It took probably 2 sessions before we could get her into the arena with the horse. And then she would still turn around and look for affirmations from us. And basically all we do is we help hold the spot for you, just keep it safe. But there was a mirror that we have in our arena. And this horse would go look at the mirror, and then it would go back to the end of the arena, which there was an opening, like it was looking out. And so we would tell her to, you know, approach the horse, and he's like, no, I need you to go with me. And we're like, no, you need to do this. And so the long and the short of this whole process with her is she realized that the horse needed to be let go, needed to be the gate. She had to get to the point to get to the horse to open the gate. Once she opened that gate and released the horse, the things emotionally that were inside of her that was causing her some things in her relationship had been released with the horse. And so that horse helped her walk through that journey. But it was shocking for us staff that when she started this, you know, this horse that she had spent a whole week with, you know, during a marriage retreat, she was, you know, perfectly fine with. And when she started her own session, she was afraid of what she was trying to get rid of inside of her. And Coco allowed her to help release that. So that's just a synopsis of things that happen. I mean, we work with a lot of the veterans with PTSD. These poor soldiers have, you know, they've seen and they've had to do some pretty rotten things while they're serving for our country. And there's no, we don't have any processes that our government helps to help these individuals deal with what they've been through. And not only just them, their families. You know, we provide these services for their families as well. It's kind of like, you know, I had these two little girls one time, and their mom had been, you know, deployed off and on for 2 or 3 years, and they're like, my mom is not the same. What is wrong with her? So.
Well, and that's true. I interview a lot of veterans here, being Brain Injury Radio, the last 20-year conflict, blast injuries, which are akin to concussions in football. You know, that was the hallmark injury in this particular conflict. And so, you know, it had been confusing because that's a TBI, and some of the symptoms of PTSD and TBI, there's a little overlap. And a lot of times the practitioners in the traditional medical model or at the VA don't recognize that a person, say, with a TBI also has PTSD, or assume it's PTSD and ignore the fact that there's a TBI. And for all of us and our veterans, it appears, you know, and I say that on here a lot, that pill pelting seems to be the answer that we get from the traditional medical model, and that doesn't get to the root of the problem, and in fact, a lot of times causes more problems. And that's where I'll give my disclaimer. I'm not a doctor. I'm only an expert at being a survivor and going through the system. But, you know, the drugs will mask some of the things that are going on. But to really get true healing, it's why I like to have guests like Joy on. There are many other avenues, and I'm not suggesting you go off any medication until you've spoken to your doctor, your medical professional about it. But, you know, if you go and find some of these other things that are cathartic and healing to you that aren't available at your corner doctor or your local VA, you might not have the need to be on as many medications. Another thing I say a lot is the first time you open your hand for one, they start multiplying like M&Ms, you know. And at the same time, I talk to other veterans who they've, some have gone to the VA and found help, but more often than not, they've either gone to the VA, not found help, or they don't want to go to the VA and talk about the situation. And I would think that that would be one instance for those who aren't ready to go and talk to their former employer's doctors or current employer doctors, that is basically what you said at the beginning, you know, about when you were a kid, and I was the same, is that with the animals, you know, there's not going to be a negative consequence for talking and sharing the things that burden you. And sometimes you don't even have to talk about it. I would imagine in those cases, sometimes the grooming of the horses or however a relationship mm-hmm. is built in that process might release the aspects of the PTSD or TBI, just like you were talking about in the other situation. And you're right, there's no mechanism for the families. It seems like in the system, the families are completely forgotten, but there's nothing that can happen to the warrior when they come home that doesn't impact the rest of the family, and they're the forgotten ones.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the time. And so that's
well,
great. I, you know, I'm glad you bring that up. Go ahead. I was just going to say it's great that you brought up that that is a family program, because it's really the family that's suffering. Sometimes we put the emphasis one place, but it impacts everyone under the same roof and maybe further.
Well, and I believe watching the process of the veterans that we have served, our veterans tend to stuff it. They're taught to not feel, to not, you know, hurt, to not any of that. And so when they are done with their time of service, that's all they know. And so it's a lot of times the family members that are actually reaching out for the services that are there for the veterans. There are lots of organizations that serve veterans, and all of them have their own way of what they do. You know, some provide financial needs, some provide, you know, just the staples, others provide the mental, the physical, things like that. So there's lots of services out there for the veterans. And as organizations, we need to all get together and refer these individuals to who can best provide what they are in need of. We have a lot of organizations that they want to start a new one, but there's already somebody doing it. So just partner with them and build upon that instead of having, you know, 15 organizations that do the same thing for veterans. That's what I see a lot of.
I agree. Yeah.
But again, when people are looking for our services, a lot of times it's a spouse or someone of that military individual who has found us and said, hey, my family needs this, or my husband or wife who's been in the military, you know, they have PTSD. How can they get your services? I think our veterans aren't aware of all the services that are out there to help them. But again, they don't want to ask either, because you feel, I think as a world, when we ask for help, it makes us appear to be weak. And just because we have something going on in our life doesn't mean we're weak. It just means that we're trying to make ourselves better.
Yeah, it means we're human. I don't know anybody that doesn't go through peaks and valleys. You know, that is kind of the nature of it. And some of the valleys are really hard to crawl out of, if not impossible, by yourself. So, you know, I encourage people to seek help. There's no shame in that. It might be in not asking for help, not shame, but consequences, very negative consequences. And I agree with you about the organizations. I see two problems, and you kind of address them both. One of them is there isn't really anybody that coordinates services, like a service coordinator. If you go to the doctor and you get put on an antidepressant, let's say, they would seldom suggest then going out and doing EMDR, or getting acupuncture, body work done, or go out and doing equine therapy, or petting animals, or why don't you get a job volunteering and doing some service work? It's good for the soul, and your soul is fractured right now. You don't hear that kind of thing. And so at least here, you know, people with brain injury are often at the point where they're really frustrated with, again, what I call the traditional medical model. They set out on their own, or they've heard on a show like this, or read an article, or, you know, seen it on TV, an idea that resonates with them that they think might be helpful, and then they go out and do it, and they talk about it. And so it seems like it's the survivors, for lack of a different word, that learn the most from each other and each other's walk and experience than they do from any one professional. And then the politics, which is what I call the 20 different organizations, instead of teaming up, being separate. You know, that happens here too. There's a brain injury national, brain injury association, brain injury alliance, brain aneurysm association, alliance. You know, there's probably, I don't know how many different organizations out there in the brain injury community that, and I don't mean to be any
right
way about it. Well, I guess I do a little bit, being a survivor and not having been able to find help at those places. What they are real good for as a radio host is when it's Awareness Month, they always have a great statistics page to pull off of to do a show. You know, but all these organizations are fighting for the same donation to do the same thing, which I guess in their words is a raising awareness. Well, that's good. Awareness does need to be raised, but if you're a survivor and you call and you say, you know, I incurred a brain injury recently and I feel like I'm going crazy or I'm not able to cognitively function as quickly as I did before. I feel broken. There isn't anybody to talk to about that, you know, at the association. Once you're damaged, once you're hurt, then they're really, you know, awareness, you're already aware. Now I need help. Do you have anything for that? No, not really. You know, you're on your own back with the doctor who, you know, will pelt a pill at it. And so there's not really anyone there coordinating, and there is a lot of duplication of services. And, you know, to me, that's just about politics and money. And so I agree with you that as a community in service, it's really kind of self-defeating if you're in a quote-unquote service industry and you're not working with, teaming with other service industries. You're competing against other service industries, especially in smaller areas. I mean, even take a city like ours. If there were 10 places, that would be too many doing the exact same thing. I mean, I think there would be a way that they could team up. You know, if you want to be in that service, you don't have to start your own. You know, we've even got hosts here that have done that. They've taken jobs as hosts to push their own. They were hosts for a little while, came up with a nonprofit for themselves, and used the network to promote their nonprofit, their own nonprofit. When we're a nonprofit and we've never asked for a dime on the air, it's just our owner's policy.
Right.
Different with our guests and things like that. But I'm just saying, Brain Injury Radio has never asked for donations on the air in our programming, yet we have some hosts that thought, wow, this is a pretty good venue to start my own you know, brain injury awareness type nonprofit organization. And, you know, my idea when talking to one of them, I'm not as nice as the guy that owns the network, even though I'm his director of operations. You know, I've said, if you're going to do that, because there is value in what you're volunteering to do, so, you know, if you want to start a nonprofit, but what would you think about kicking back a percentage of that to the house, the one that's supplying the equipment, the 14 years of streaming around the world, you know, the paying for your chair, your space, you know, that's no different than any place else. You know, there's overhead and they're getting it for free. And so if you're going to make money, then maybe you kick some back. Well, God, you'd think I poked him in the eye with a toothpick, you know, saying something as ghastly as that. They never would have thought of that, and in fact, have never done it, you know. And so, anyway, he lets them go, and that's fine, but I do raise the point from time to time because, you know, their integrity situations, too. You know, you kind of wonder about, I do anyway, wonder about doing business with people or places that don't strike me as having an honest integrity, you know. If you're here to give back, be fair and give back, you know, not just lining your own pocket, I guess. But
right.
So just one of those life lessons, people. I was just thinking of your young man from the Goodwill because there's so many lessons in everything we do, and it's easy to ignore the doing the right thing, you know, forego the inconvenient lessons, you know, and jump all over the easy ones. And so a lot of that has to do with responsibility and integrity and honesty and heart. And that's really service. So anyway, that's what I saw there. So that's cool. So that's a little bit about the programs for different groups of kids, seniors, veterans, their families, volunteers. Mm-hmm. And then the public themselves come in and tell us a little bit about...
I'm gonna go back one more though. We have one more program. It's our at-risk youth program, where it's called our Be Somebody program. And our Be Somebody program is built off of attitude, integrity, grit, and purpose. Basically goes back to the Code of the West. You know, a handshake meant your word and your honor. And so these individuals learn about grit. They learn about purpose and integrity. And in today's day and age, integrity is not a word that's commonly known to this generation, as well as grit. You know, grit means you got to work hard to get something. A lot of individuals think that things are owed to them. You know, entitlement.
Entitlement.
And so this program helps these individuals. It's about a 12-week program. We have a couple classes that we do at the Open Door Mission with their youth. We go into Sarpy County Juvenile Detention Center and do some visits and programming there, as well as some other youth programs and foundations and organizations that we work with. And then we have individuals that come here, and I do one-on-one this Be Somebody program with foster care. We are partnered with Project Harmony and working with some of their individuals that have been swooped up in the sex trafficking and things like that as well. So another great program that is kind of geared towards youth, but we've also used this same program to do team building events for corporations as well.
Oh, that's fantastic. because, yeah, in the corporations, some of the people either didn't learn some of those things or forgot. And with the kids, you know, that's not something that's being taught in school. And a lot of times, depending on the, a lot of the at-risk youth aren't in an ideal home life. So a lot of times there's not help there. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, at-risk would be a problem. And, you know, we're seeing on the news every night, locally and nationally, what that does and what that the lack of those values are doing, you know, to the country, to people. And so I think that's fantastic that a dose of reality and, you know, harmony, teaching people how to act, because things worked a lot better that way. You know, I just,
well,
I can't believe.
A lot of it is teamwork as well. And so these, you know, the youth want to do everything on their own because they can do it better. And so it teaches them that there's things in life that you can't do on your own. You have to rely on other people to help you do that. And so it helps build that confidence to, you know, trust themselves, but also to trust others to help get the task done, you know, completely. You know, one of our first icebreakers when we start the class is we have two puzzles, and it's a race to see who can get the puzzle put together, you know, the fastest. And so they're all hurrying up, and they've got it together, and they realize, you know, there's a piece missing. So they're all looking on the floor, you know, did you take the piece? Who's got the piece? You know, well, there was no piece. You know, so the object was nobody won, but you had to work together to get the task done. And so it's good to know that they can work together. And but again, it's competition, and life is not always about competing, because you're not always going to win, and sometimes you have to be a loser too.
A graceful loser.
Yeah, graceful loser, yes. Yes.
And expect it's going to come sometimes.
Yep, I deal with a lot of angry young individuals when we do this class. So just because they're angry at themselves, or just they don't have the best lifestyle, you know, not a safe family unit. And so there's a lot of anger and a lot of bitterness, and, you know, they always want to be on top. They want to, you know, I'm going to be better than that. And so it teaches them that sometimes we just got to step back and take a look at ourselves first.
Yeah, and I guess you might not have been here yet when, well, maybe you were, because I talk about it takes the we to develop the new me. And, you know, that's the same thing. It's fine to be independent and want to do things on your own, but, you know, you learn, you can't. If you don't have the skill set or the knowledge, then you're really flying blind doing it that way. And it isn't going to be effective. And then when you're already angry, you're going to be angrier because you're frustrated. You know, one thing about the we is, you know, while you're developing the new me, you learn other ways and get other perspectives by the we to help improve your me. to be able to do those things, to get the other ideas. I think that's a great, the puzzle idea. I can imagine that you get some angry people with that exercise, but that is so good because they do, you know, we've watched society go through a stage. I was in a writer's group for a while, and the topic he wanted us to write on is, you know, was about every kid getting a trophy. And your thoughts on that. And, you know, it's basically what we're talking about here. You're going to win some and you're going to lose some in life. That's just a fact. So the sooner you can understand the reality of you win some, you lose some, and then try to find the grace and humility when you lose some to be a good loser and if there's a takeaway lesson to learn there to do it better next time or just that you were better at losing this time because you didn't lose it over losing. You accepted the fact that, well, next time I'll do better. This wasn't my best game.
Right.
So, well, that's really, really encouraging. And I hope more organizations will do that because those aren't the kind of things we're hearing, you know, that we're hearing on the news. We're hearing the opposite of that. And some of us older people are just kind of shaking our head going, geez, that is, you know, we can see the train coming, you know, down the track, and it's a helpless feeling, you know. You can't help everyone, but, you know, you watch some of this behavior on TV and the attitude you were talking about, and we can tell the train's coming, you know, that one way or another, consequences catch up, you know, and so it's great that you have that program as well. So that's a lot of programs, a little something for everybody. And then going on, some of the differences, you know, people, and the zoo's great. We have probably one of the best zoos as far as zoos go, I bet, in the country here in Omaha. At least it's very large. Has a lot of things in it, but you don't get to interact with the animals. There's a barrier there. And I was thinking when you were talking earlier about the barrier that some of these people have in actually getting to touch an animal or go in the pen with an animal. That was something I didn't realize at first when I came because, you know, people were in their respective fenced areas. And the first time I saw people walk in that didn't work there, you know, I was like, wow, I wonder if they're supposed to be doing that. And so I stopped and asked one of your people that did work there, and she said, oh, yeah, you can go in and pet any of the animals in the area, you know, that I was in. And I was like, really? And that was amazing to me that you didn't need them. They didn't have to necessarily be there. You could actually walk in and interact with the animals like I did with the wallaby and everybody else. I like the little ponies too, and the alpacas and the ostriches and, you know, the camels and, you know, everything that's out there. You've got such a variety of animals out there. And are most of those animals rescue?
Majority of our animals are rescues, but then we have the same license as any national zoo, like Henry Dorley or San Diego Zoo. And so some of our exotics, we either bring in, you know, we'll swap from, you know, another zoo, and or we purchase them from breeders who breed for zoos. So, like, we had some baby Codamundes that a zoo in Minnesota was interested in, and we actually swapped two of the babies for an albino wallaby.
I remember that baby. The albino that was there when the other, you had two babies.
We had a baby,
time.
We had a baby kangaroo and a baby wallaby. Yep.
Okay,
so
then what you guys on the scrolling pictures, the scrolling pictures, then you're looking at a baby kangaroo that's in that pouch.
Yep.
Because
that
was the same day.
That was Arani is her name. So another thing that we do at our location is, because we work with special needs individuals, like our kangaroos, they are a family unit. So we have Olivia, Klee, and Arani. They all have the letter O. They all start with letter O. So when we work with our clients that have some challenges, the kangaroos, all the same letter name, letter recognition, is a family unit. So as I've expanded over the years, I've learned that everyone speaks in a different language, not so much, you know, Spanish, German, English is what I'm not trying to say. But like in our tool shed where we keep our supplies for cleaning, we have rakes and shovels and buckets and brooms. And so let's say, Kim, you go to the tool shed and you get a rake and a shovel and you go on about your task and volunteer doing what you're doing. But you're with a group and someone in your group brings those tools back to the shop. And so everything is labeled, but what I learned over the years was I can put a rake there, but you could read it, but the person who brought it back doesn't know how to read. And so everything that we have has a, it says rake, and then it has a picture of what rake goes there. Now, many of you know there's different types of rakes. There's a fan rake and there's a, you know, a garden rake. And so tool, I've learned we have to speak a couple different languages, you know, verbal, non-communicative. And so now these individuals have succeeded because they've returned the item back where it needs to go. So it's all been a whole process, you know, since I've started this, learning also how to better communicate with these individuals that come so they can be successful.
Absolutely. Putting the visual with the word, because everybody, you know, is that way. Some people are more visual and some people are more verbal, and so to put the words and the graphics together to help connect them is a great idea. I, like you said, you live and learn. in the environment where you're getting the experience, because that's a great idea, considering a great way to learn.
How you can serve these individuals better. How do you make it better for them? Life is already a challenge for the people that we serve, whether it's PTSD, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, abuse, whatever it is, they've already got their challenges. So don't make something new to them more challenging, because then that just makes them feel like they've not succeeded again. And just,
right. Interesting. So then I understand that you broker some of the animals, rescue some of the animals, rescue the people, have the programs. Go ahead.
Also,
what were you going to say?
When there's catastrophic events in our country,
yes.
Tell us about the flood. To get out, I'm out on the road helping rescue animals. So yes, down in 2019, we had a flood here in this area, and so we were called out many times. But probably the biggest one was we were able to help pull in 300 goats out of the water and get them to our location and get them dried off. So when I went into this facility to help get these goats, it took us about 3 to 4 hours to gather them up. We were walking through hip-high water. These goats were kind of out on this little rock island in their paddock, just trying to stay up out of the water. People were carrying them to the trailers, and so the road that I actually had gone in on, when we were getting ready to finally pull out, the sheriff's office had called me and told me that the road had just washed out. And so I had known earlier in the day, the only other road out had been closed out, but we knew that it was a blacktop road, and so we just started heading north, and there was 3 different spots of water that we went through. The first was up to my running boards, the second was like halfway up on my truck, and I remember the last time we went through the water, it was coming over the hood of the truck. And all I could see is could see the state patrol driver, the state patrol sitting ahead of me. And I just said, Jesus, take the wheel. And let me tell you, we got all 300 of them goats out of there. And I didn't realize how cold the water was, because it was like March. So it was until I had gotten into my truck and started the heater, and I could finally start feeling my legs. But we helped airboat donkeys and horses out of areas. And probably the most exciting part was these airboats were going in and bringing these people out, but they had pets, and they would not allow them to bring their pets. And so these people were staying in their homes. They're like, I'm not leaving my dog behind, because these animals are, you know, we talked about at the beginning of the show, they're family members. And so when we only got the airboats after the people were out, because they said that people first, animals later. So then we would go in, and then we were pulling people and animals out, because now they're able to come out with their animals. But we've been to New Orleans a couple times and helped with the hurricanes. When the tornado hit Kentucky a couple years ago, we took a trailer load of supplies down, some fencing material, some water, food for, you know, dog food, cat litter, things like that. So this community has been really amazing when we make the plea of, you know, let's fill the trailer. Our people have been really a blessing and helping provide those needs for other parts of the country. They're going through a catastrophic, you know, those animals. I remember the place in Kentucky, it was a farm. They had milked a handful of cows and some goats. And when we got there, there was two little calf huts that had these two baby calves in it. All the other animals were gone. They had no idea where they were, but these two little calf huts were still there. And we brought those guys back to our ranch, and we called them Caleb and Joshua, because we figured they were, like, in the Bible wandering, trying to figure out where they were going to. But a blessing that we're able to serve as well to those individuals, wherever it may be, when they're going through a trying time and trying to put their life back together.
Yes. Well, in the flood, I remember hearing about that. And this, for those of you listening, we had three rivers that had a confluence, I think they call it, but it was three rivers that flooded. And, oh my God, you wouldn't believe how deep and how far this flood went. And it was tragic watching animals that didn't make it. I mean, you consider the fact that, you know, a lot of this was out in the country, so you had cattle farms and people that had horses and obviously their cats, their dogs, everything else. And it was just, that was really terrifying. I've never seen anything like that. We were, we took a different route to southern Missouri, somewhere we were going, when we thought it was over, and then tried to come back, you know, past Kansas City the shorter way. And when we were coming up the interstate, Missouri up to, you know, through by the river through Iowa, Nebraska, the water was so deep you couldn't see any of the trees or farms or anything that you normally see there. And the water was up to the interstate, and parts of the interstate were closed. Exits were closed. You could see they were flooded. It was like, I don't know, something I don't remember seeing anything like it in my lifetime. That was really brave of you to do. sure, a lot of grateful people, but that was really scary and neat of you to do. So those kind of rescues and being willing to do that are really commendable. And for the people that are just going in for the wanting to see, you know, some of these things that we're talking about, there's the educational aspect of just learning about the animals. So on each pen or area where there is an animal, there's a sheet, a fact sheet, I guess you'd call it, that has a photo of the animal and its name and what part of the world or country it comes from, some information on the animals. And its birth date, that's right. And its birth date is on there. So just learning more, but also if you have a group of young people or older people, whatever people they are, it's not just not that that isn't huge, the ability to be able to go in and interact, touching, interacting with these animals, but it is a learning experience too, and it's not sitting in a classroom. It's actually right there for you to read when you see each of the animals, which I thought was really cool. That's a little extra you didn't need to do, but it sure is helpful, you know, to teach people. I mean, obviously, I know what a cow is, but I did not know that part about the porcupines. And you have a sign on the cage. Does it say, I like to be petted?
It says Aquila.
Something
Aquila.
To that effect.
Yep. So one of our porcupines' name is Aquila, and it says petting wanted.
Yes, petting wanted. Now, I thought that was a joke.
A lot of people do.
All right, Aquila, next time I'm petting you. That was funny. I pointed to the sign to my husband. I said, I bet she does want to be petted. But I didn't know. I thought like everybody else, which is another reason why the educational aspect is important, you know, to know.
Mm-hmm.
Those things. You might miss an opportunity to pet a porcupine.
Exactly.
Someday. You know, and who would want to do that when you're right there?
It probably should have been. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it is now, you know, it is now. So I'm happy, you know, that's something fun to look forward to next time, because when I post the pictures of that, no one will believe it, because I bet you most people that see the picture would be thinking, wow, she's really brave to be petting that porcupine, and I may or may not tell.
There you go.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I did mention in the beginning that you're a nonprofit. People have gotten to hear for a couple hours all of the services that Scatter Joy Acres offers to so many people. And it's not only the projects, but, you know, housing, feeding, even though there's volunteers, you know, the cost in these animals, you look at the cost even now for just in general, not adoption, but I mean in general, the cost of a dog, something some people mm-hmm. might be more familiar with, you know, how much a dog costs now and how much you invest the first year with all the vaccines, you know, and the well checks and all of that. So how much cost is involved?
Heartworm pills and everything, yeah.
All of that. Very expensive just for your average dog. Now you get into camels and alpacas and wallabies and kangaroos and all of that, and there's a lot of cost involved in these animals and their lodging and their food. And so I want to say again, the website, and of course they do take donations appreciated, I'm sure, to help keep all of these valuable programs going. And all of the animals, which if you have the opportunity to visit and or watching some things on the Facebook page and the website, I think you'll be on board as well. It's holiday time. People are thinking of giving right now, and this is certainly a worthy place to give in that it helps people across the board and animals. And it's such a cool idea to rescue animals, rescue people. They rescue each other. And I'm just, those who've been listening to my show for a while or that know me know what I said in the beginning, what an animal lover I am. And I've done shows before. I think some people thought I was crazy. Did one show about animal energy and talked about different animals and the corresponding energy that they represent for humans, a Native American deal. And found that to be true. I had an owl for a while. Not a big owl. It was the tiniest, close to the tiniest, a little screech owl that came back from October to March, 6 years in a row, to a hollow in our backyard tree. And we had a relationship, and I've been sad the last 2 years. You know, I've had my, been out there looking up all the time, and Hootie hasn't come back the last 2 years. Last year, I thought I knew what it was about. Blue Jays are not nice to little screech owls. They come in a pack, and they're big and they're mean and they peck, and the owl doesn't feel safe. And there were a lot of those 2 years ago, and I got out two pie tins. Yelling at them didn't seem to do much. It didn't bother Hootie. Hootie knew I wasn't a threat, but I wanted the Blue Jays to think I was a threat. Yelling at them didn't do anything, but they did not like the sound of two pie tins banging together. Mm-hmm. And that got rid of them, but I couldn't be there all the time. Anyway, the last 2 years, Hootie hasn't come. But 6 years in a row, like magic. You know, I'd walk out sometime into September, beginning of November, and Hootie would be there in his hollow, and then he'd leave around St. Patrick's Day, and I suppose go somewhere back to his wife and make some more owlets. But in any case, the website is Scatter, S-C-A-T-T-E-R, Joy Acres. ScatterJoyAcres.org. And again, that is listed in my program notes. It is posted all over social media, but you can find it easily at inaflash.org, my own website, under shows, or braininjuryradio.com, this show, and in the program notes. I always write the website. So if you're driving or you don't have a pen or can't get out of the easy chair while you're listening, that happens to me sometimes, it'll be in the program notes tomorrow. And I encourage you, while you're in a mind of giving, to give to a place like this that provides a service to so many. Are there any anything you'd like to say in closing, Joy? Where I can't believe it's been,
I know, right?
Almost 2 hours already, but it's been really a pleasure having you. I was so excited about having you on. Thank you for doing this and sharing with us.
I appreciate it, and I think you and I had spoke to that I can relate with the brain injury as well, because my daughter at the age of 4 had a fractured skull and still suffers somewhat from her TBI. So you know, we serve a mighty army of individuals, but people who have traumatic brain injuries seem to be a little bit harder on themselves because they know the capabilities of the things that they used to be able to do, and they can't do it at the same speed or the same focus that they used to, and so it's a struggle. And so I've watched the animals at the ranch just be able to just to love them unconditionally and support those individuals in a very powerful way. I am so blessed to run the organization that I do and to be able to see the successes that happen every day. When people who just come to the petting zoo think that they're just coming to pet an animal, and there's some amazing things that happen in their life while they're here. So thanks for having us on. And I wish everybody a wonderful, happy holiday. And if you're ever in the Omaha area, anybody who's listening, we would sure love to have you come out to our ranch and explore and pet a porcupine.
Yeah. Definitely pet a porcupine. And happy holidays to you, Joy. Thank you so much for coming on and for all you do to help so many.
Yeah, this time of year is hard on a lot of individuals, and we serve a lot of people through the holidays and, you know, loss of someone or just holidays are tough for some people if they don't have family or anybody to share it with. So we're open 365 days a year, and our animals are always here to be someone's family.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I'll let you get to bed. I know one thing in your industry is you're up early. The animals don't sleep in. Give you
nope,
a chance
they don't.
To, so...
Yeah.
All right.
All
well,
dog,
I'll turn you loose again. Well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. They're not fighting over the bones anymore.
No,
that poor baby.
Over the bones.
Well, you just tell that particular puppy is famous. He streamed all 50 states and 42
yeah, no doubt.
Countries with that cry. So that's a famous one. So. All right. Thank you so much, Joy. Good night.
You're welcome. Good night.
Okay, everybody. I hope that you were able to listen to this show. Again, that was Joy Bartling from Scattered Joy Acres. Wonderful organization that helps so many, from developmentally disabled, autistic children, seniors. They go out on field trips, bring different animals to senior facilities, veterans and their families who suffer from TBI, PTSD, an at-risk children's group, rescue. They do dog rescue, cat rescue, and a lot of the animals that are there that have been rescued. And so, again, like I say, I know everybody's hitting on you from every angle, but when you're in the mood for giving this holiday season, remember this place if you're an animal lover and how many groups they help and how much it must cost to feed and shelter all of these wonderful animals. So anyway, I appreciate the job that Joy Bartling does. I'll see you next Wednesday. I appreciate you. Good night and God bless. And I'm just going to close this out. 'Tis the season, I guess. We were talking about animals. Maybe I'll do Giraldi and we can think of Snoopy. Good night, everybody. Thanks.